Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome once again to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we return to our genre exploration, this time looking at biopics and talking about what makes them particularly a film that seems to get a lot of Oscar attention around this time of year. What makes for a good biopic? What makes for a problematic biopic? And then our top five will be the top five biopic portrayals. What actor and actress performances does Brian consider to be the most compelling? Doesn't necessarily mean the movie's any good, but the actor's performances are what garner the attention. But before we get to all that, as always, Brian, we start with where are you in your quest for 10,000?
7583.
And what was the last movie you watched?
Well, it was a movie from the 70s with Sidney Poitier, which is the sequel to the sequel, In the Heat of the Night.
I didn't even know that was a threequel. So
The Mr. Tibbs character went on to star in two additional films after he left Racist Mississippi.
Was there a law of diminishing returns? I'm sensing that in your voice.
So, well, you know, it was not good, but what you gonna do? Now, another movie I saw recently, which was very good, is a new movie, just came out, the Lego Batman movie. And it was everything I had hoped it would be. I've said this to several people since, and I really do. I think in so many ways, I think DC would be better off to make this their primary universe is this sort of off-kilter, irreverent Lego versions of their universe. It's so much more knows what it's doing and has it shit together than does the actual live-action version of their movies.
Well, it seems like DC probably wants to have everything they can, their cake, and to eat it too. I'm excited. I have not seen the Lego Batman movie yet. But have heard great things and think it's number one at the box office this week too, which is not terribly surprising at this time of year.
No, February is not necessarily and this is about the time of year when Lego Movie came out too. You know, you're right. I mean, if you got kid-friendly fare in February, you're probably going to rise to number one.
Well, listeners, tell us what you think of movies you've seen lately too. You can do that by dropping us a line on Twitter, at 10K, T-E-N-K Movies, or going to Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, where you also find this podcast and an archive also for all these podcast episodes, so you can continue on the journey with Brian and I to 10,000 movies. A number of the movies probably on that list are about historical figures and the travails and triumphs they've had along the way. And so that brings us to talking about the genre of biopic. And thinking, again, particularly where we want to start this conversation, Brian, is why is it that Oscar season always seems to have one biopic kind of heavily in discussion?
If you look at the winners, typically, I think it's been like 20, 30 years that there hasn't been at least one of the winners of the four acting awards that was not playing a real person. Typically, you know, they have a leg up. And I think a lot of that has to do with it gives you a point of reference. I can't necessarily, if you acted and created this fictional character that didn't exist anywhere else, I can't easily judge how well you did it compared to how someone else could have done it. But when I can look at photos and mannerisms and videos of a real person, I can say you became that person or didn't, I can judge that more concretely and say, yes, you did. So it becomes more of how well did you impersonate the person that you were, because the character is more clearly defined.
Right. Now, remind me, this year, I think, you know, a picture that was probably helpful to get some Oscar attention didn't get as much, though, as had to have been hoped, but Sully would kind of fall, Tom Hanks would fall in that kind of Oscar bait biopic sort of film.
Yeah, no,
and I'm So how would you, though, maybe before we talk again about some more about how these tend to be kind of prime movers and shakers during Oscar season, how would you define a biopic? With something like last year's movie, The Remnant, is that a biopic? Because it's about, historical figures, historical
events. I guess you could argue it is. I mean, to me, it doesn't feel like it is, but I can see how you're making the case for it.
So what would you call, what's the difference maybe between a historical account, a historical fiction maybe,
versus historical biopic,
versus sort of a biopic? What would you say is the main difference?
You know, historical fiction usually is more interested in an event than in a person, because like Pearl Harbor, historical fiction, but nobody's arguing that that's a biopic of anything. Or, you know, any other, as long as the focus is on the event itself, like All the President's Men, it's probably more historical fiction than it is biopic, because it's not about Woodward and Bernstein. I mean, it's not their story. It's about the event they found themselves sort of sucked into.
Yeah, and I guess, too, in terms of just the term itself, you know, biopic implies biography. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense that biopic, historical fiction, biopic would focus more on the entire life or a good segment of the life of kind of its main figure, and also trying to draw some sort of lesson and truth out of that particular part of that person's life.
This year, you know, there's a movie that I'm not sure how, if I would call it a biopic or not, but Lion, about the young boy that was separated from his family. In fact, it is about his life, but it feels like it's more it doesn't go into a lot of detail about his actual life. You know, it's not about, it is a biopic
So that might be a gradation of, you know, based on a true story type of film.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on the one hand, maybe there's a continuum. Maybe biopic's a big umbrella. So there's a continuum. On one end, it's kind of historical fiction. On one would be something like Ray, starring Jamie Foxx many years ago.
Yeah, or Walk the Line or something like that.
Yeah, where you see him from childhood to adult. And in the middle, some of these, you know, based on a true story, those sorts of things.
It's hard.
And we're talking more about, when we're thinking about biopic, we're probably talking more about that end, more the Ray end of the spectrum.
The stuff that's more clearly like delineated as... it's pretty obvious. That's what, if you move away from it, it gets harder and harder for you to say with, you know, definition that this is a biopic, where it gets harder to do that.
And some of those movies, it gets harder to talk about maybe the point of view, the point that a filmmaker is trying to make probably gets.
Yeah.
Potentially gets a little more lost in some of those type of films.
Well, on one hand,
in a film like Pearl Harbor, where you have a lot more explosions than something like The Longest Day. You know, but still, there can be at least, you know, the last 10, 15 years, those kind of historical moment movies probably haven't done as well and been as well received on the whole as some of these more on a particular historical figure.
The one thing I will say is that for the most part, it is extremely difficult to find maybe I'm overstating it, but it's extremely tempting as a director or as a producer to pull down a really fascinating life into this, put it down to a 2-hour movie. It's real tempting to kind of go through almost paint-by-numbers biopic. I mean, they almost, like we were talking about just a minute ago, Ray and Walk the Line, in so many ways, those movies feel identical.
Right.
In so many ways, it's like, this is the same movie, which is why it's right for parodying something like Walk Hard, because it hits the same button. And we recognize that. This is exactly, you know, Tortured Artist Turns Good, the movie to make.
Well, yeah, but those movies also, I mean, I get what you're saying about formula, but both of those movies execute that formula really well. Maybe let's talk about that a little bit in terms of what makes for a good biopic and then what kind of makes for one that's not so good.
Well, you got to have, you know, the person has to have a compelling story. They can't just be a person who was famous for a moment or had a big part. They have to have a compelling story. A lot of people, even historically important people, were made, you know, they may have had great importance, but their life taken as a whole really isn't that interesting in a way. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not unique in a way that, like, woo, you know, gets you excited about it, you know. But that moment, sure, and they did wonderful things. That's not to say that they weren't interesting people, but it's just their life story doesn't have those obstacles or doesn't have that sort of, like, dramatic tension that you need.
Okay, so obviously the source material itself has to be something that is captivating and, again, has the potential to kind of draw some larger meaning out of it in some way.
The casting is vitally important. You have to cast it correctly.
Yeah.
And I would say even
the casting, you know, it's obvious to say perhaps and not, you know, terribly insightful, but I'd almost even say the casting of the supporting players just as important, sometimes more important than whoever you have as the title figure. That was part of, I think, what was so good about Walk the Line is that, you know, Reese Witherspoon and Joaquin Phoenix played off of each other so well together. And so that chemistry didn't almost matter how accurate they were in mannerism and that sort of stuff, is that you really believe in their chemistry to be similar to what must
when you're doing, you know,
Johnny and
what,
June.
As you get closer and closer to, like, historical figures of the more recent past, the 80s, 90s, you start doing biopics of them, in some ways a lot harder because we have seen this person. Like you look at Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln, yeah, we've seen pictures of Lincoln, but we don't really know much about how Lincoln carried himself or how he worked a room or his presence in a room or his speeches. I mean, we may have anecdotal evidence, we don't have that on video, we can look it up. So it becomes artistic freedom to create that image of what Lincoln could have been in our minds. Whereas if you did Bill Clinton, we all pretty much know. You know what I'm saying? Like, instantly you're doing a movie about Clinton, and I know whether you nailed it or not because I know Bill Clinton. You know, so it becomes, you know, it'll be interesting as people want to turn, as people turn to more recent history to see how that works, if it becomes more parody or if they try to really nail it and make it real truthful to what we know to be true. Or...
Well, that's interesting. I was trying to think, you know, of biopics that haven't been as successful or as critically acclaimed. And it's hard to come up with a list. Probably the ones we haven't heard of, we just haven't heard of because they haven't been very good. But
yeah,
your point
right.
makes me think about the Oliver Stone movie.
W.
It's called W. About
and I love it.
And you, I have no doubt, but it didn't do all that well. And I wonder if part of it really is that dynamic. If it was just too soon and it was too close to George W. Bush's presidency for it to be any kind of success at the box office.
Some of it feels kind of like. It feels so close, and in this movie's case, in W's case, it also gets saddled with the political baggage of Oliver Stone, who we know where he's come from. I mean, you don't doubt his politics for a second, so you go into the movie expecting certain, you know, slants, and so you work that into your, like, understanding of the movie before you even see the movie, which sort of colors how you can't see it with fresh eyes.
I wonder, too, I think also of another one that was maybe a little more critically acclaimed, but just not one that jumps to your mind as easily as some of the others we've mentioned. And it should have been great. You're great. You had an Academy Award winner playing the title character in Anthony Hopkins, but Nixon...
Now, that one I didn't like as much, even though I love Nixon.
And so I wonder if – that's a conversation for another time, the love of Nixon. But I wonder, too, if partly what gets biopics respect or attention, usually the subject matter not only has to be compelling, but has to be something you tend to root for. Like there has to be some construction of – the narrative or some entryway into retelling that story it just doesn't work as well when maybe it's someone like Nixon who,
well, there, the only
it's hard to make him into a hero, or with Bush, which it's hard for Oliver Stone to make Bush any kind of hero,
and for half the people going to see the movie.
Right.
But when you well, the one exception to something like that, which I think is one of the more interesting biopics of the last 15 years, and I want to say it's middle of the first decade of the 21st century, a movie about Hitler called Downfall. Now, you may not be familiar with the movie, but you've seen the memes of, like, Hitler.
Yeah,
a lot. It became, you know, famous in and on its own right. But that movie was really, really well done, and it's about the most disgusting person you can think of in the 20th century. But it was really well done. But even when they did it, all the people involved were, like, reticent about signing up for it, because they're like, are we humanizing Hitler here? Like, what exactly are we, what are we doing? And there was some of that, but the point was not to humanize Hitler where you sympathize with him. The point was to humanize him so that you understand man, that he's not a mythical larger than life, that he was a person just like you or I. In a lot of ways, you know, that he still was subject to, like, you know, passions and desires of any other person. It's just, you know, how that can get transformed into something. And it primarily focused on his last days when the war was winding down and he sort of knew that it was but this movie in some ways became more about how his followers reacted, you know, knowledge of it. It was really good, but it is really, really difficult to do a movie about a historical figure that people have such strong passions of hatred for and make it a success.
Well, and I wonder too, was Downfall a foreign film?
It was not an American film.
That also, you know, I think it wasn't released in the U.S. It probably,
if it did, it got a very limited release. Yeah.
Who knows how it would have done, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think
you're right.
It also gives it a little bit of a different feel. In that those who are telling the story kind of...
Well, I mean, but, you know, think in our recent past, though, because his life would be a fascinating story because there's so much of it. Osama bin Laden's life story is fascinating. I mean, it really is a fascinating story, but it's unfilmable because, you just couldn't... You might could write a book about it, but then, you know, your audience is extremely limited, but who would want to run the risk of somebody saying that you were being a monster, you know, but it is a fascinating story.
Yeah. Now you mentioned the word monster.
I did.
Another one in this sort of way. And one that actually won Charlize Theron an Academy Award.
It did.
Monster. Say more about that film.
I will. Primarily for one of our most loyal readers. Well, Charlize was excellent in it because she proved, like a lot of times, especially for Academy success, if you're willing to physically transform your body, and in her case, it was someone who's naturally, you know, one of the most beautiful women in the world, willing to gain 70 pounds and go makeupless and look like, you know, disgusting in a lot of ways. That's bravery. Well, you know, maybe not, but it does show a devotion to your craft. And the movie's good. It's not nearly as frightening as Eileen is in her own right.
Well, and I think it works too because, you know, it's this anti-hero maybe kind of thing that the narrative creates. But it also probably does treat its subject matter with a sense of dignity. Maybe in ways that others that aren't as successful.
It doesn't justify her behavior, but it certainly makes you much more sympathetic to her than you would have been otherwise, which is a dangerous thing to go down. You don't want to be sympathizing with it slaughtered, you know, lots of innocent people, and they weren't all innocent. Most of them were trying to procure her services as a prostitute. So it's just very difficult to do a biopic without a hero. Extremely... it's a very difficult road to go down as a director, as a producer, as a writer, and just hard to do.
Well, then that may be tipping your hand a little bit, but let's go ahead and move on to then our top five. Your top five actors, actresses, portrayals of historical figures in biopics, so not in these historical fictions or kind of based on a true story films. Your top five performances in a biopic picture.
Okay, and I'm, you know, I'm sure if you ask me on another day of the week, I might have a slightly different answer. But these are five that I think are really good. And coming in at number 10 is a movie about 15 years ago, a Michael Mann movie about Muhammad Ali with Will Smith as Muhammad Ali. I think he did a really – and in part, you know, that movie works because John Voight was just as excellent as Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
Although he doesn't get all the credit necessarily that Smith does, I think Smith's performance sort of
the voice. And a great example of something we haven't also said about a biopic. I think there's something about a biopic kind of being on an actor's bucket list to kind of mm-hmm. do and portray. And for Smith, Ali's a great example of a film
you
that kind
to get
of elevated
those...
him to an mm-hmm. actual movie star.
Well, I mean, you know, who doesn't want to be, you know, the man who portrayed Muhammad Ali on screen? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that sort of burnishes you. And here's another one, a little bit older film, but I think this one is also worthy of discussion. And it certainly burnishes
you. This is your number four.
I'm going to say this is number four, yeah. This is Ben Kingsley as Gandhi.
Oh,
I think you can get better, like, in so many ways. When I think of Gandhi, like that's the first image I think of, because it's, you know, he is Gandhi, and it's really weird to see. Sometimes you see Ben Kingsley something else. It's hard to remember because this was early in his career, and now it's, you know, almost 35 years ago. But it's hard to remember that he did it. But it was a really, really, really good performance.
I agree. That's one that I hadn't thought of until you mentioned.
No, you just
it.
Forget and, about it because it's so long old.
Kind of the classic, a classic example of one too. Won a lot of mm-hmm. Academy Awards. So what's number three?
Oh yeah, number three. I'm gonna go more recent, and I'm gonna make this a tie because they're so recent in time frame. And I'm gonna say two ladies that portrayed two of the more famous women in recent British history. And I'm going to go with Helen Mirren in The Queen and Meryl Streep in The Iron Lady.
Okay, Margaret Thatcher and Queen Elizabeth II, yeah.
I mean, as much as I you know this, our listeners may not, as much as I have always loved Nixon, I love Queen Elizabeth II. I really do love the Queen. And Helen Mirren was just so very good in that movie. So excellent. And,
yeah,
you know,
she was fantastic. She goes and drives that Jeep.
I know. It opens up a character that was one of those rare biopics that takes a character that we all know really well and have seen our whole life, but explores and opens that character up in a way that we have not thought of that character in that way before.
And another question that film particularly maybe asked us to think about, if we take a step back, is, you know, probably changing some events around a little bit, you know, again, kind of getting to the truth of what that historical moment was about and what those characters may have been doing, and shows that a biopic too, more concerned with the again, the point of view, the message, than it might be always considered with the exact historical facts of the event and the people that it's depicting.
And another thing is
composite characters and some compressed timelines, and
that was one
that's
of
probably
three movies that featured Michael Sheen as Tony Blair. There's another one where it's about him and Bill and Hillary, and it's really good. I mean, but he was, again, like you said earlier, a lot of these biopics, it really depends on the supporting character nailing their role to enable the other person to be, you know, rise to excellence.
That's right.
And Margaret, I mean, Meryl Streep can do, as far as, you know, she can do little wrong, but she was so excellent in showing how, whether you liked her politics or not, the resolve it took for Thatcher to be able to climb the top of the greasy pole in London politics in a world that was not just dominated, it was exclusively male. And for her to, you know, that took some chutzpah, regardless of what you think of her or what she did to the country. That's an enormous success on her part.
All right, number two.
Number two, this is another recent movie, but it goes back, and it's one I alluded to earlier, Daniel Day-Lewis is Abraham Lincoln. It's kind of getting lost in the shuffle, and it's a little underrated, but he was good. And I don't know if his name, if you should call him Day-Lewis or Lewis. I always get, but anyhow, he's so good in the movie, and it casts the passage of the 13th Amendment in a way that was really, really, I mean, probably accurate, but just illuminating as to how the politics of that time worked.
And two things I'll just add about that film. One, somewhere in between when it was announced that he was cast and some of the first stills were released from the film of him dressed as Lincoln, you're like, everybody knew he was winning the Academy Award.
Oh,
so I think that says all you know about his performance.
Well, and apparently,
I thought the other person who was amazing in that movie, and maybe even better than Daniel Day-Lewis, and again, it goes to that point that the supporting
Tommy
actor
Lee Jones.
In the playoff is so good. Not Tommy Lee Jones, who played the Secretary of State, David Fulis, who played.
Okay.
I just thought he was magnificent and amazing. We're closing in on time a little bit here, so let's move on to number one.
Number one is an enigmatic figure from our recent past that we all know, and it's a little torn. People may not necessarily all have loved this movie. I did, and that is I can't remember the guy's name, but Steve Jobs from Aaron Sorkin, the guy that the
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was a real clever and ingenious way of different product launches to show us. And structuring it around the way, of course, you know, Jessica Sorkin is writing it. But that, I really appreciated the cleverness of it, and I really liked it.
Well, listeners, tell us who your top five would be in this category of biopic performers. Follow us on Twitter. Go to Brian's blog. Let us know what you think. Rate, review, do all those wonderful things. Thank you so much for spending time with us on this episode of The Quest for 10,000. We'll catch you again in a couple of weeks. But until then, we hope this week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.